What's one of the strongest factors in a client's recovery from depression? So far, we've looked at how patterns of low motivation and rigid thinking can sustain depression, and how disrupting those patterns can spark change. But Dr. Michael Yapko warns that there's one particular kind of thought pattern that we don't want to overlook. According to Michael, when a client thinks this way, it can negatively impact the entire course of treatment.
If we go from general to specific, if we look at the treatments that have the highest treatment success rate, all of them in one way or another emphasize the importance of skill building. And whether it's cognitive behavioral therapy and teaching people how to use information and make better decisions, or whether it's interpersonal therapy and teaching people how to build better and more enduring and healthy relationships, or whether it's behavioral activation therapy and getting people moving. And so there are certain common denominators of best techniques, whatever they are. They are active. They require the depressed person to be active in the treatment process. Depression itself is built on a foundation of passivity. If depression was a commercial product, its advertising slogan would be, "Why bother?" And so getting people moving is a really important thing, but empowering people who are feeling so helpless, so hopeless. So if we look at my favorite approaches, or the things that I consider to be pretty essential, one is knowing that the person's negative expectations influence every phase of therapy. Why bother to seek therapy if you don't think it's going to make a difference? How can you progress quickly or if you don't believe progress is even possible? Why do the homework your therapist gives you, reading books or carrying out homework assignments, if you don't believe it's going to make a difference? And it predicts, expectations predict whether the person's recovery will be partial or complete, and it predicts how likely they are to relapse. So building expectancy is the single most important thing that you can do early on in treatment.
As we all know, that early stage of the treatment process can be so critical. Building expectancy can be one way to help lead your client to a more positive outcome. To get right down to it, if a client can't believe in a better life, they may not be able to get there. Now, Michael will often use hypnotic techniques to help build this sense of hopefulness in his client. A little later, we'll explain how he does it. But first, why is this approach so helpful?
I've described in some of my writings a technique I use called hypnotically building expectancy. And it's about getting the person absorbed hypnotically, doing hypnosis with them, and orienting them to that all-important notion that effort can pay off. That instead of feeling helpless and hopeless, that I'm going to be providing things to do, ways of acquiring skills that are very specific, that are going to make a difference in the quality of this person's life. And as I orient them to a legitimate basis for hopefulness, helping them establish realistic goals for themselves and what the steps are, the sequences are for reaching those goals. And doing it in hypnosis reaches a very different quality of experience than if you just say to somebody, I think I can help you. Or doing something like a miracle question, which suggests to people that things might change, but under miraculous conditions. I want them to know that there are specific things that they can do that I'll start to orient them to during the hypnosis. And that's what brings people back. If you look at why people drop out of treatment, what are called mortality statistics, the people who only come in for one session or two sessions and then they drop out, the negative expectancy. If you spend the whole first session just taking history, and then you say to this person, I think I can help you, there's a pretty good chance they're not going to come back. The person has not walked away with anything new, anything experiential that leads them to believe things really can change.
That's an important piece of the puzzle. If a client can't legitimately feel that there's a way out of their depression, they may struggle with their commitment to the work. Now, expectancy is just one factor that Michael looks at when he's treating depression. He also points to another kind of rigid thought pattern that can be tricky to work with. He explains why this kind of thinking can be a challenge and why it's crucial to resource your clients against it.
When we look at all the risk factors for depression, and there are scores of them, one of the most important risk factors is tolerance for ambiguity. One of the things that we know about depressed people is they don't tolerate ambiguity very well. And that leads them to jump to conclusions that aren't warranted. And so, you know, when I'm being kind of summary oriented about depression, I'll say the real problem with depressed folks is that they think things and then they make the mistake of believing themselves. One of the most important skills that you can teach is how to recognize and tolerate ambiguity. And so what that means is that when situations happen, you don't really know why they happened, but instead of instantly and reflexively projecting something negative into it, the reason that that person didn't say hello to me is because they must not like me, you're in danger every time you form those kinds of negative explanations that are self-damaging. And so it's one of the training processes of helping people recognize ambiguous situations, control the impulse to make meaning out of that ambiguous situation, and just recognize that you don't know why that happened. You don't know, you're not going to know why it happened, and just get comfortable not knowing. So those are, you know, two of my favorite techniques for working with depression: hypnotically building expectancy and teaching clients to recognize and tolerate ambiguity.
So just a quick recap on Michael's thoughts. He looked at two ways to work with the rigid thinking that can sustain depression. One, hypnotically build expectancy. Help your client to experientially believe that healing is possible. And two, teach clients to recognize and tolerate ambiguity. Clients can prevent thinking themselves into depression if they learn to accept the idea of not knowing. Okay, so I mentioned earlier that Michael would go a little deeper into how to hypnotically build expectancy with a client. Here he walks us through how he does that.
It's standard in any kind of an induction, really, of just getting people focused and absorbed. But in hypnotically building expectancy, one of the most important messages is to say that the future isn't going to be more of the same. And so I'll offer examples, and it might sound something like this. And as whenever you're doing hypnosis, it always goes from general to specific and from less personal to more personal. So I might just wonder out loud that here we are living in this particular time. And it's a really curious thing, knowing that technologies are going to change, transportation is going to change, medicine is going to change. I wonder what diseases that we can't cure now will eventually be curable. I wonder what changes there will be in the society structure that lead to different opportunities for people. And, you know, so I'm just musing aloud about all these inevitable changes, and the message, of course, is change is inevitable. Then I can start to make it more personal, that you've had experiences in your life that you've been through, where you've had to display resources. You mentioned to me, for example, that you recently moved here from another city, and I don't know if you've ever really thought about it this way before, but you don't just move. You start with preparation. You start deciding what things are worth taking with you and what things are worth leaving behind, which things used to have meaning that just don't have meaning anymore, and which things have taken on a new meaning. And so something seemingly as simple as moving from one city to another starts to highlight to you that you have resources, that you're able to adapt to new situations, and to start to bring those abilities into new situations in your life in ways that you couldn't possibly have anticipated allows you to start to look forward to what the possibilities are, what the changes are that are still going to unfold, the things that you're going to be learning that you can use in new ways that can bring you a quality of satisfaction that you haven't experienced maybe ever, but certainly not in a long time. And just going on like that with, you know, connecting you to specific resources, your ability to adapt, your ability to develop new skills, your ability to try new things, your willingness to experiment with new possibilities. And all of those things that start to orient the person experientially to the idea that change is inevitable, and now let's get in front of it and decide what kinds of changes you want as we get more into the goal setting for your particular case.
Building that kind of expectancy and anticipation can be important groundwork when treating depression. By focusing on a client's abilities, it can help to reverse the rigid thinking that binds them to their depression. With possibility can come a renewed hope for change. Dr. Kelly McGonigal has an exercise that speaks to Michael's ideas on expectancy. So let's hear from her now.
The type of exercise that is the only mental exercise that has been shown in the literature to consistently increase people's hope and optimism, which is to have them detail what their ideal outcome is, sort of their ideal self or their ideal future and what it would look like. And, you know, Michael had talked about that version of the miracle question. If you woke up tomorrow and by a miracle, your whatever your suffering is was no longer here, what would that look like? To actually have people do that as a useful exercise rather than just a casual conversation. So let's imagine at the end of, you know, when at the end of our working together, you know, how will you know that our work together is done? When you wake up in the morning, how will your experience of life be different? Tell me what that would be like and imagine it. Because we know that once people imagine something, they're more likely to believe it's possible, and they're more likely to take action in that direction. So we can just exploit the things that we've been talking about. Now, the other thing that is sort of less drawn from the literature, so I can't point to a lot of data that this works, but my experience is if people believe like they have something bigger than themselves on their side, it certainly is useful. And to try to tap into that if it's available. Like, we are doing this together. And can you also, you know, imagine a support system that is working on your behalf as well? And I've had people who imagine their ancestors who are sort of cheering them on, a lineage of people who have also suffered in the past who are going to be, you know, with us in this environment, sending their strength and their support. It could be religious faith. It could be, I'm not sure what else it could be, but if you're asking what actually increases people's chances of believing that this is going to work, that is one that is very powerful if it's available to be brought into treatment.
Now, Kelly just touched on the idea of clients calling up an imagined support system, and we'll get into some strategies for helping clients activate real support systems later in the bonus section of this program. But up next, we'll look at how to work with a client's strongly held belief that they're unlikable. I'll see you there.